everyone, before this episode dives in earnest, just wanted to let you know we recorded this episode before episode 6, which you heard last month. So if you hear any weird continuity errors, that's why. And that's all I got. That's all the disclaimer I got. So let's dive into the episode. On this episode of Still Loading...
How about trading for a digital watch? It has two alarms, a stopwatch, and dials the telephone.
It's a deal!
Hey! What's a telephone?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and we are back again with more Captain N. And as per usual, Dexter is here. Dex, say hi.
Hey. Hello, everybody.
And for the first time, we have a special guest on this, on our little mini series that we have going on. We have Stefan Reese from the Art of Nintendo Power. Stefan, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Wait, am I your first special guest? Like, you're like your first guest? Wow. Yes. Fancy. All right.
At least for this miniseries, I've had guests on for the regular episodes, but we haven't had anyone on for we've been doing this deep dive. I shouldn't say deep dive. I mean, I guess it is. We're doing a rewatch series. Going through, you know, one mini episode at a time per episode of Captain N. And so you're the first one to join us for one of these mini episodes.
Awesome. Well, I am honored.
But due to the magic of time travel, we are actually talking about episode 7 first instead of 6, just due to some scheduling stuff. So even though you're hearing this later, you might have actually heard Stefan in the previous episode, depending on how long this one goes. So you know, magic and science and all that. Have fun. It's fun, kids. So we are here to talk about Captain N, episode 7, season 1, episode 7, Three Men and a Dragon. And I want to get from each of you, what's the first thing that stuck out to you from this episode? I will go first. I hope I don't take it from anyone. I'm just giving you time to think. The name is based off that Ted Danson and what's his face? All the oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name.
Three Men and a Baby.
Right?
Yeah.
Three Men and a Baby. Yeah, it's Ted Danson. It's
super topical.
I can't remember the name. That's gonna piss me off that I can't remember the other actor's name.
Right?
Yeah, I can't. Well, but I can't.
It was
think
such a memorable film franchise. So you know,
there's two sequels to it as well. Three Men and a Girl is the sequel, which actually came out, I think, later. So, like, Three Men, I actually was curious because I'm like, why would, like, was it in the zeitgeist? Was it popular at the time? Three Men and a Baby came out in 1988. I want to say 87, excuse 87. Me.
Yeah.
87. And then its sequel came out, I want to say, 3 years later in 1990. So this was, like, either right before or right during production of its sequel. Tom Selleck, that's the dude's name, and Steve Guttenberg, the goot himself.
Yeah,
it's a lot of goot.
I think that movie was also directed by Leonard Nimoy. Just like
it was.
No, what, really?
Yeah, wow. It's directed by Leonard Nimoy. Huh. It's such a. I remember looking it up because I was like, when I saw the title of the episode, I'm like, all right, let's. I remember this movie. I don't remember much about it. I just remember it existing.
The only thing that I ever think of about Leonard Nimoy outside of the Star Trek universe is that like bizarre Bilbo Baggins song that he did.
I've never seen that.
He did a song about Lord of the Rings, essentially, and it is the weirdest thing. And it has an equally weird music video, so you should definitely watch that.
Ooh, I haven't seen the music video. I just know the song, so I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, it's like got complete with like 60s go-go dancers, but like
that's fantastic.
But he's singing about Bilbo Baggins and like it's so weird.
Are the go-go dancers hobbits? I really hope so. Otherwise, it's a severe like, or they could be elves too. If you're going for like the sexy
nothing
angle,
nothing about that whole experience makes any sense.
That's
just
like
Captain N.
I love when you hear about celebrities doing stuff you weren't expecting them to do, like Leonard Nimoy with the Hobbit song. That's interesting. Hulk Hogan with his beach rap, Beach Patrol or whatever. You ever heard that? That song is wild. And then, you know, Christopher Lee, before he passed away, did like metal, heavy metal music. He sang
songs. Yeah. And they were good, too.
That's what I've heard.
Good stuff.
Anyway, Captain N, Three Men and a Little Lady was the sequel to Three Men and a Baby, and it came out in 1990. So it was right around the time. So either this episode came out right around then, but I really feel like it came out before then. So I don't think it was influenced by the sequel. But, you know, it was obviously influenced by Three Men and a Baby.
Which I never understood, right? Especially for kids' cartoons. Like, no kid cared about, had any idea what the actual episode name was. Like, yep. It was clearly, hey kids, you know, Three Men and a Baby? Like, what?
Like, there's so many references in these shows, and I'm assuming we're gonna talk about it in episode 6, but I would just want to touch on it. They do a Three Stooges reference at the end of episode 6, which I thought was super weird, and it's just like, once again, referencing stuff that's like kids probably weren't aware of at the time.
It's a
very strange thing. What stuck out to you guys, though? What was one of the first things that stuck out to you guys about this episode? Stefan, since you're the guest, let's have you go first.
I mean, it's sort of this is another episode where I was just like, the first question in my head was like, how much purview did Nintendo have over any of these plots or cared? Because it was just like clearly the episode is revolving around Dragon Warrior.
Yes.
But it's like they told the writer's room that Dragon Warrior was a game, and then that's it. And they're like, I don't understand, like, because I'm 100. It was the same thing, like Mother Brain's, the planet that Mother Brain is on is called Metroid, and for Captain N. And it's just like, at what point did they not, like, did Nintendo not go, I think they named the planet here was like Dragon's Den.
Dragon's, right? Den, yeah.
Why? you know, it's just like that. That's what stuck out to me, like, where it was just like, I guess I just expect when you're working with first party and have like access to their knowledge base that you could be a little bit more accurate. And especially because like there's like a line in there where Captain N says, oh yeah, I played this game a ton back on Earth or whatever, like I'm paraphrasing, but like
he
references being really intimately familiar with Dragon Warrior, and then like the actual Dragon Warrior content is so like throwaway that it's ridiculous. So that's the first thing that stuck out to me. I don't have nice things to say about these episodes. Let me just get that out of the way.
It's okay. We're here to make fun of it. We're here to admire it. And I shouldn't say make fun, because I did reach out actually to the writer of the entire first season to ask him to come onto the show. He declined politely. But I'm hesitant to say anything bad about it, because I want him to come on and ask him, like, how much was he given? Because the writers for these cartoons probably weren't given much of the source material at all. Like, he was probably locked in a room for a weekend, given maybe a mound of cocaine and said, finish it.
Right. No, I'm being honest when I said that, you know, they probably did just tell them that there was a game called Dragon Warrior and go. You know, the Nintendo Power Magazine was very similar. That's why you look at, like, the cover for Secret of Mana. It's supposed to be Flammy from Secret of Mana, the dragon, and it looks nothing like that dragon. It's just a dragon. And you see that a lot. Of course, like, famously, the cover of Mega Man 2
both of the Mega Man books. Or the first two.
So yeah,
I would. It's so funny to see those two, because they progressively get closer to the source material. Like, the first one is so not even close. The second one, at least, like, some of the robot masters look like they're supposed to, but Mega Man still is holding a pistol for some reason. And then it finally gets to, by the third one, it's like, okay, you're understanding this now. You're understanding a little bit more of your source material.
Yeah, but Nintendo was pretty notorious for this, even like for their own products. Like, I have a bunch of production notes that are basically faxes for the Howard and Nestor strip. Faxes between the editor and the artist, and it was, I have one where it's like, they were doing the Wing Commander issue of, or the Wing Commander strip for Howard and Nestor, and the only notes that were given were like a couple scans from the PC instruction manual that just had like the Kalrathi like ships on it, and that was it. and then like, okay, go make a Wing Commander comic strip. Like that
you
was...
just have to make everything else up off just that.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, Dexter, before we get to you, I guess we should have probably said all this as well, but Stefan, kind of give the listeners a little bit of an idea of like who you are and what you do outside of just being a Captain N lover.
Oh yes. So far I've been very loving Captain N. So although I am, your listeners can't see it, but I am wearing a pretty awesome Captain N jacket right now.
I love it. I want one.
So I am known online most places as Art of Nintendo Power. But really what I do is I am the executive director of a 501c nonprofit called the Interactive Art Collection. And so the Art of Nintendo Power is actually my like flagship museum exhibit. So what the Interactive Art Collection does is we are a nonprofit art museum that rather than having, you know, a brick and mortar where people come to us, we piggyback off of conventions and we put up pop-up museums, because it's like the overhead on a museum, unless you are very well funded, is intense. And really, you know, it's for all this bluster and show, it's just me, right? So like I can only self-fund so much. And yeah. So our flagship exhibit is Art of Nintendo Power, which I also use as a Twitter handle because it is very good SEO. I'm very easily to find. So the collection, the total archive is about 350 pieces of original art from Nintendo Power magazine, including some of the early cover sculptures. So I have like the shoes from the Track and Field 2 cover. I have the Wily ship from the Mega Man 2 cover. I've got the Mario from the Mario Paint cover. So sculptures like that, but most of it is, you know, original paintings from covers or interior illustrations. So I've got around 150 of that framed right now. And so that's sort of like the show collection, mostly for security reasons. I can only really show things that are framed because it's really difficult to steal a frame versus rolling something up and putting it in your pocket. So that's kind of what I'm about. I'm all about the archiving and sharing of original art from the video game industry, specifically Nintendo Power. Although if I were to happen upon a collection of other cover art or, you know, Atari art or whatever, like I would be remiss to turn any of that down.
Yeah.
I just have had a lot of luck and a lot of passion for the magazine in particular. And so the most compelling display I have is the Art of Nintendo Power. I also have a Nintendo Gameplay Counselor display. The last time that was put on display was at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo in 2019.
Okay.
But that is the largest private collection of a Nintendo Gameplay Counselor memorabilia. Usually what my display ends up looking like is I try to recreate the desk of a Nintendo Gameplay Counselor.
Oh, that's so cool.
So I have everything I have in the archive is counselor used. So I have, you know, systems that were sitting on their desks, televisions that were sitting on their desks, phones that were sitting on their desks. So everything that you see is actually authentically used by a Nintendo Gameplay Counselor. And I try to build compelling displays out of that. And sort of really my passion is for finding these like really niche segments of the game industry that not a lot of people know about. You know, like gameplay counselors disappeared overnight with the advent of the internet, basically. Mm-hmm. So especially now, you know, people don't really understand why they didn't just Google it, right? That's one of my big questions. Is, you know, especially from the kids, or, you know, or like people don't understand what a call center was. So those are the kinds of things that I kind of gravitate to and like to share. So all my pop-up museum exhibits are kind of built around that. But if you'd like to follow me, the easiest thing is on Twitter. It's Art of NP or at Art of NP. Also, if you just Google Art of Nintendo Power, you'll find me. I actually sort high. When you search for Nintendo Power on Google right now, I search higher than Nintendo does. So that's
pretty fantastic. That's nuts. I mean, like you said, good SEO. It's good important. SEO.
Yeah. All my exhibits are free other than whatever the door charges for the actual convention. I make no money off of this. And that's by design. how, you know, the idea is to not give Nintendo any excuse, right?
That's
me in a nutshell. So yeah, follow me on Twitter, art of NP. I'm also on Instagram. It's art of Nintendo Power with underscores between all the words. But I have a YouTube channel that I infrequently update. Because this is not my full-time job. This is just something that I'm passionate to do and love to do. So, that's me.
That's awesome. And now after hearing about that authentic gameplay counselor setup you have, I kind of wish there was a place that people, you know how like the National Video Game Museum has like an authentic 80s bedroom that you can go to and play NES and stuff in it. You should, if it was only possible, obviously you'd have to worry about people breaking shit. But like if you didn't have the fear of that, set it up so people could go in and actually receive phone calls.
I did. So at the Portland show, I did have, so I also hosted a panel where I brought in, obviously through gathering all of this stuff, I have made relationships with a large number of former gameplay counselors. So we also did a panel discussion. So I had gameplay counselors on hand. So I do have photos of them sitting at my display, like actual gameplay counselors sitting at the desk. That was pretty cool. I do want, the one thing that I don't have that I would love, that allegedly there's some people out there who did take them, is the original cubicles. When they bulldozed the building that the call center was in 2010, they basically said, hey, if anybody wants to take anything, just take it. And some people apparently did take cubicles. So I think there's at least a couple out there. That's like my, if people talk about holy grails, my holy grails are all like ridiculous things like office cubicles.
I just like that idea. Like, what's your holy grail in collecting? A cubicle.
Yeah.
I want a cubicle.
Or like one of the things that I got most excited, I have Howard Phillips's nameplate from his desk.
What?
That was, back when he was like sitting in the cube farm with the counselors. So,
for those who don't know who Howard Phillips was, he was the head of Nintendo of America during that time, right?
He was responsible for essentially bringing the NES to,
that's what it was,
to the US. You know, looking at the Famicom and being like, yep, this is something we want, you know, that kind of, he was their guy in charge of fun, right? And like and also, I'm not actually honestly sure what his actual title was, because he did a bunch of stuff, but like, but he was also there. He was also their like figurehead for Nintendo Power magazine, like the president of the Nintendo Fun Club, and obviously he was Howard in Howard and Nestor. Mm-hmm. He was the guy that's, you know, was supposed to have played all the games, and up to a certain point he did play all the games until it got a little ridiculous.
I wanted to double check. His title was Game Master and Director of Game Creative at Nintendo of America, and he was originally their warehouse manager. You said, he was responsible for bringing over the NES. That's what it was. I think Minoru Arakawa. I can't say his name.
Minoru Arakawa and Howard Lincoln is the,
that's who it was.
Who you were thinking
the
of?
Damn, yeah. Howard name. That's what it was. Yeah. Anyway, we've gone on a long roundabout thing. So Dexter, what was the first thing that stuck out to you about episode 7 of Captain N?
It actually kind of piggybacks off of what Stefan was talking about. He was saying how, like, clearly it's reference of Dragon Warrior or Dragon Quest, you know, now. But I was like, is this Dragon Warrior? Like, because of how bad the references are, other than, you know, the Dragon Lord, and they go to a couple
magic
of locations.
Herb.
Yeah, and the castle at the end, but like just a couple of name checks. Other than that, like, that's what kind of stuck out to me, was like, it kind of took a little while for me to be like, oh, I think they're doing Dragon Warrior.
it's Yeah, so one of the things we do on these episodes, Stefan, is that we always like to see what are the game elements that they added to that are part of the episode. Dragon Warrior is obviously the main one. And then there's also a featured song that doesn't show up on the online version because obviously copyright issues. Mm. This episode was supposed to feature Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder.
Yeah.
I don't know where it was going to go in. I have no idea what port. Now, this is also off of Wikipedia. I have not cross-referenced this, so who knows? Someone could have just made that shit up. But that's a bizarrely specific thing to put in there, so maybe it's true.
They had the montage with the baby dragon kind of near the end.
And that's a weird song to play for a baby dragon, like a baby girl. Isn't she lovely? Wouldn't that be weird to you? I don't know, maybe.
Sure. Would it be weird? Sure. Did it happen? Probably.
Probably.
Both of those things can be true, sir.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. So let's dive into this then. The first thing that happens is that you see the world of Dragon's Den and this mother and daughter getting chased by the evil dragon lord and his minions. And this scene kind of basically he has this magic amulet that turns what's the exact quote?
It turns their heart dark or something.
Yeah. The darkness of the hearts of good. It changes their hearts to darkness or something of good dragons. And he does that to the kid's mother. And then the mother turns on the daughter and starts breathing fire at her. And probably if I was like younger or slash not a parent, this wouldn't have meant anything to me. But as a parent now, I'm like, this is horrifying.
Yeah, that's what I was like. This is super dark. I was like, geez. Yeah, for sure.
Just coming out swinging. I don't think Nintendo okayed this at all. And to reference also something that we were mentioning before about these episodes, weird references, they call the character Puff. Like Puff the Magic Dragon, which yeah, I don't think kids sure in the 90s would have really been aware of a 70s TV show.
This writer's room was like writing the show for themselves. 100%.
100%.
100%. You know, it reminded me of like the Family Matters. Was the original writer's room was all Jewish men. And like the true fact. Where's all Jewish men? And so like one of the first things that happens, I think it's in the very first episode, is that the aunt, I forget her name, but she walks through the door and goes, "Oy vey." And I'm like, yes, that is a room full of Jewish men. Yes. Right. So yeah, that's it amazing. Totally reminds me of that, where it's just like completely like writing from themselves instead of for their audience.
It just reeks of it. There's so much of stuff like that. And we were talking off mic about some of the jokes that they kind of sneak in where I'm just like, this is definitely like was not meant for kids at all, which, you know, a lot of cartoons do that. But it's just kind of weird to see that out of a Nintendo cartoon more than anything else. Just like, who knows? So the Puff gets runs away. Puff the Magic Dragon runs away from her mother that just turned evil and tried to murder her with fire. And then it cuts to the Palace of Power where they're playing this weird version of tennis where Simon decides, I don't know what's up with Simon, but he has to play every single sport with his whip. And that's not a euphemism.
Or is it?
Or I mean, God help any woman if that's the case down there. That's his situation down there.
Something I was going to say before we got to the tennis game was that, like, if you didn't see the intro to this show, you would have been like, where's Captain? Like, this isn't Captain N. What show am I watching? These dragons. Yeah. Until Mother Brain shows up and she's like, how's my hypnotizing
crystal? For one line. I was honestly half watching. Does she even, like, show up? Or is it just like a VO?
It's pretty much she shows up visually, but it's like a portal that the Dragon Lord is watching through. It's like she's not physically there. You just see her in like this.
Yeah, she's like, portal. How's my amulet doing? And he's like, great. And then that's it. Moving on.
We got to tie this in somehow.
like, what is the motivation here? What's happening?
And yeah. it's just like the beginning, the motivation is so flimsy. The end, and we're not going to jump to the end just yet, but when we get to it, you'll hear what I'm talking, what I mean by that. The ending is so like, oh shit, we got to wrap this up. Okay, let's just find some reason for this episode to end. And that's the episode begin. To be fair, it's consistent that the episode begins that way and it ends that way. It's like, oh shit, we got to find some way to tie this into Captain N. Oh shit, we got to end this somehow with Captain N. So they have to. Sorry, Dexter, did you have anything else though? Did I cut you off any further?
No, just that, like, until Mother Brain shows up and delivers that one line, which, once again, like, if the kid goes out and grabs a snack real quick and comes back, he still thinks this is a different show.
I legit, when I started the episode and it was talking about Dragon's Den, I'm like, well, this is the Captain N announcer's voice, but I don't know how this ties in with Captain N at all. I'm very confused by this. So they it cuts to them playing this weird version of tennis, and of course Captain N's using his power pad to like jump around and beat Simon, and then Simon's like, well, I'm going to use my vampire ball, whatever the fuck that means. And it's just a ball with vampire fangs and it bites him in the butt, and I guess that's supposed to be funny. As a kid, I probably
laughed at that. Castlevania. Get it?
No, there's so much of that. I love the stupid Simon in this episode. I don't know if you guys noticed this. He had crazy eyes almost the entirety of this episode. Like, he looked like he was ready to murder somebody almost the entirety of this episode, more than any other one. That's and I funny. First noticed it when they get the call from Dragon's Den. Those weird random three elders that I don't even know their names. Do they even say their names?
They're the keepers.
No, and it's so bizarre too. Oh, it's so bizarre too, because it's like they set up the planet as like, this is the planet of dragons. So I'm like, okay, so everyone here is a dragon. Like, that's, and then like, then there's these three dudes. And it's like, who are you?
And they don't even look like dragons. They look like,
no, they're just dudes. They look like wise men
from the Dark Crystal or something like that, like from a Jim Henson Muppet special, but not Muppets, but you know what I'm talking about, like one of his puppets things. So they give them the mission, like, we're under, you know, one of our good dragons has been turned and we need your help, otherwise we could lose all the good dragons. And so Simon's like, oh, I love to go in dragon hunting. It's my second favorite thing besides vampire hunting. So then he puts on this like this British looking get up like you would see in like almost like a James Bond movie where they're going hunting or bringing out the foxes to hunt, or they're hunting foxes or whatever. And that's the first time you see his crazy eyes. He gets on he puts on his hat and he blows the horn and he gets trampled by a bunch of foxes, and that's the first time his eyes just, like, they're very beady. It just, he looks insane. That's, I'm just gonna say it. He looks insane.
Yeah, and what a strange joke to go with too, like being trampled by the foxes and the dogs. And even weirder than that was that he was like, I used the wrong horn. And then he's trampled, he blows a different horn that looks exactly the same and is trampled by sheep and camels, which I'm like, what?
I want to know are they referencing something, or they just think this was a funny idea? Like, kids will find this funny.
I don't know. Maybe. If they pulled camels from a hat, like, yeah, what would be funny? Camels.
Camels from a portal? That sounds like a band name. A bad one, but it sounds like a band name.
Yes, but the most awkward part, though, is how that scene ends with Lana being like, Simon, and then there's this long pause.
And she just stares at him.
And then she pulls him off camera.
It was a really, yeah. I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, what did she, is she, you're waiting for her to say something or like scold him, and there's just silence.
This whole series is like no one in the writer's room knows how to end a scene, right? Like starting maybe, one, no problem. Wrapping it up, mm-mm.
Maybe it was in that silence that they played Isn't It Lovely? Isn't She Lovely by Stevie Wonder. That was the,
I know, right?
There was enough space in there.
I feel like that's just a symptom of like shows back then. And the only reason I say this is because I recently, like late last year, I binge watched all of the Fresh Prince, because I only got to watch bits of it when I was younger. So I never saw most of the episodes. And there's a thing that happens in almost every episode where they start a storyline and they don't see it through to completion. Like, there's no like satisfying conclusion to it. Just like something bad will happen. The conflict will kind of get resolved, but you don't see how the relationships resolve the issue. Like, say Will did something stupid and he broke something, right? He'll get it repaired, but then you don't see the interaction with him and Uncle Phil afterwards showing like how they reconciled, like emotionally, like, why would you do that? It don't, you know, teaching some kind of lesson. Like, the lesson has already been, is just, I guess, that they resolved it, but there's no actual, like, it's weird. It happened so often where the episode would just kind of end. I'm like, I feel like there's a thread here you could have tied up a little bit nicer. And it really kind of feels like that in this show, where, like you're saying, they just don't know how to end a scene. Like, you're expecting something more, and then it's just kind of like, well, on to the next thing. Did you care about that? Who gives a fuck? We're on.
Remember,
the next one.
Remember the dragons? Here we go.
That's pretty much it. So they end up.
I do have to mention the second time I watched this that those three, the keepers of power in Dragon's Den,
that's what they're called.
They said the line, "You must be a dragon warrior," and I was like, "Oh,
they said the thing."
He said it.
They win the show. Yeah.
Yeah. The keepers of power, who, by the way, have no idea where the like power they're supposed to be keeping is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're exactly. Right. I didn't even think about that. You're not. Oh my god, I didn't even think about that. They're like, where are those? I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know.
You have to.
What is your job? You had one job.
Just go through the dragon portal and find out.
Yeah, that's fine. Why don't you do it? Because it's dangerous. Duh. Sorry. Okay, we're jumping ahead of ourselves.
That's a little bit further, but
yeah, yeah.
I didn't even think about that. That's so good. That's like, I don't know. Did I send this to you, Dexter? I saw this thing the other day on Instagram where, just thinking of things that should be the one thing's job. Someone sent me. It was like a meme where it had all the Legend of Zeldas. It's like, Legend of Zelda's where Link goes to the past, and it's like six different titles, and then Zelda's where Link doesn't go to the past, and it's Link to the Past. I'm like, I never thought of that before. He doesn't go to the past in that game.
That's really funny.
It's really good. So yeah, they end up in Dragon's Den and they're going to get weapons, and Simon's like, I have plenty of weapons. Why would I need to do any of this? And so they go into the tavern, or no, sorry, the shop, not the tavern. And he, you know, Kevin gets magical herbs.
Herbs.
Herbs. Sorry, herbs. That's my running joke. Everything I have to quote Home Alone at least once with the Kevin thing. So he gets magic herbs. And what is it? He doesn't have. He's like, do you take American cash? Did you take U.S.? And the guy's like, that's worth nothing here. So then he gives him his watch, and this might be the quote I want to use for the episode. But after, the guy's like, sure, I'll take the watch, and he goes, and Kevin's, you know, listing off all the different things it can do, and you know, it keeps track of time, and it does this and that, has like so many alarms. And after he leaves, and he pays the guy with his watch, the guy goes, oh, what's a watch, or what's
a telephone? Or like,
no, no, because Kevin says that it can, first of all, says his watch can make phone calls.
That's what it is.
Which is a ridiculous thing to say. There is no way in 90 or 91. There's no way in hell. Yeah, there's no way in hell he's gonna have a watch that makes phone calls.
That's where my running gag comes in, where that Captain N like created and inspired things of the future.
That's right.
Just saying.
It's happened so many times so far.
More importantly, it just illustrates that Kevin is a liar.
He sold the man a false bill of goods.
That's right. He's like, you can't possibly check, right? You can't possibly prove me wrong. So I'm just going to say that it makes phone
calls.
Where's
your phone in Dragon's Den?
Yeah. And then that dude is like, what's a phone, right? Yeah, 100%.
I mean, to be fair, that's on that guy. If Kevin said it can make phone calls and the guy doesn't know what a phone is, he's like, it sounds fancy. I'm just going to buy it.
I don't even know if that watch actually belonged to Kevin, because when he holds it up to the camera, it's engraved with the name Revan underneath. So
he's a liar and a thief.
He's a liar and a thief. Yeah.
I thought it said Kevin on there. I didn't see.
It could have been like an animation mistake, but it said Revan.
Revan.
R-E-V-I-N. Yeah.
As long as it doesn't say Kevinicus or whatever.
Oh my God.
Says a billion
this
times.
Is why I hate episode 6. It's just like the Kid Icarus show, and I have to listen. Oh God. I hate it so much.
So anyway, many Icuses.
I know. I hate it.
It's so bad. You know, so they're on their way to find Puff the Magic Dragon, and Mother Brain tells her basically. So Mother Brain is actually in this episode. I forgot you see her because she sends Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo to go after them to assist Dragonzord. And one of the weirdest scenes in this is Mother Brain grabs like a water bottle, opens up her mouth, and then squirts the water bottle like it's supposed to go in her mouth, but she's got. She's in a glass tube, so it just splatters all over her glass tube.
they actually set up this joke. You missed the joke. They actually set it up. It still doesn't make sense when I explain it.
Okay, then do your best.
King Hippo says, calls her brain
mother
breath.
Brain breath.
And when she gets upset, he blames Eggplant Wizard, and for some reason she believes him. But that was like breath freshener that she tries to spray. But you're right. That I wrote that down too. Like she sprays it onto the glass jar.
You know what? That's actually like if it was in a different context, that's actually a pretty decent joke. Like yeah. She forgets that she can't do that. In episode 6, they have a line. Hold on. What did I wrote it down. They had a line where they say like, they call her mother breath again, or like brain breath or something like that. And I thought that was, they call her mother breath in episode 6. I wrote it down. So they call her brain breath in this and mother breath in episode 6. I feel like the 90s were in late 80s were just a time where like, if you have some word and then breath, and for some reason that's an insult, lame breath, head breath. I don't know. Butt breath.
They needed like a matrix in the writer's room. That was just like things we've called mother brain. And then,
and this 2D matrix. It's like 30 by 30. Oh my god, that would be so funny. I really wish that existed. If it does, I'll email Jeffrey Scott again.
That's right. Can we please have photos of the writer's room?
There's just lines everywhere. It's the only thing I could. It's funny. So we were watching episode 6, and my wife goes, "Am I high?" Like that was her first comment when it came on. So she sends King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard to go assist. And so begins just another ridiculous scene with those. By far, Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo are my favorite characters in the show. Like half of their lines are just insane and nuts. I still quote from, what was it, Dex, like episode 3 or something, where like, I'm gonna make you an accident on purpose or something like that.
God.
It's something insane like that.
I'm gonna have an accident on purpose, something like
or one of my favorite is it's where they're chasing
I'm
after
choke you to death. I like that.
I'm gonna artichoke you to death. Wow. There's also their King Hippo's trying to slip through a warp zone and he can't. So Eggplant Wizard says, "You just need a little lubrication," and he then squirts him with like salad dressing, and King Hippo's like, "Hey, this ain't lubrication." I just can't get it out of my head. It's so awful and funny. Okay, so when King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard get there, they're met by two dragons that are meant to assist them. At first, they're afraid of them, and then they learn they can ride them. They find the end team, and they are chasing after them. I believe at this point, have they found Puff? I don't remember if they found Puff before this. They did not.
No, the conceit of the title, the three men and a dragon, is like the last 5 to 8 minutes of the episode. Like it's not even really like a main thing until the end. But
that's right, because they don't until the princess and Mega Man kind of split off, right? That's when they find Puff.
Which I don't. Did they have a line where they're like, "Let's split up"?
I don't think they did. I think it just happened.
I don't remember. I would equally believe that they did or they did not. Just like,
because both times I watched it, I was like, I know it's really hard for me to pay attention to this, but like,
how did we get here? That's probably the most recurring question that I have watching the series. It's just like, how did we get here?
You're just in a constant state of confusion. It's all the time. Oh my god!
It's like when you fall asleep in the middle of a movie, and you wake up like, wait, like it's but you're awake, like, but it gives you the feeling
that happened to me one time. My friend paid for a ticket to go see the Tim Burton Alice in Wonderland movie, and I fell asleep like maybe 15 minutes in, and I woke up in the final battle. I'm like, what the fuck's happening? What is going on?
It's just like that. This is just like that, but without the sleeping.
Stole dragons too.
You're not wrong. I don't even remember anything of that movie at all. And my friend paid for the ticket. He was so mad at me. Oh my god. So they start attacking Captain the Dragons and Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo start attacking the end crew. Kevin gets frozen and Duke has to break off the magic herb, herb and it unfreezes him. And I have a note about Duke. So in the live action opening of the show, did they just paint a dot on that dog's eye? Because it does not look natural. Because you know how Duke has the one spot around his eye? On the live action version of it.
Same thing with Pete from The Little Rascals. I think they painted the dot on that dog too.
It just looks like they painted the dog's fur. And I'm like, that seems borderline animal cruelty to me. I mean, maybe I'm being oversensitive about it. I don't know. But I feel like that dog wouldn't have liked getting its eye painted. And also, I don't think the dog looked like the animated version of him at all. Like, does Duke look anything like the live action Duke look anything like the animated one? It almost seems like they took a golden retriever and said, this is close enough. And then, or they retrofitted the dog. It seems like they animated it first.
Okay.
And then,
all right. So I'm looking at the intro right now. They definitely painted that on a golden retriever. Yeah.
And the dog in the cartoon doesn't even look like a golden retriever. So it's like, did they just not find a dog that looked close enough to the animation? Like, I don't know.
They didn't have the time to care or the budget to care. They literally were just
definitely
like, okay,
have the budget to care.
Seriously, like they were probably like the creative team was sitting here talking and going, okay, who has a dog? If we don't care. Just bring them in. Just who has a dog? And then
we can fix it.
Oh, I got a golden retriever. It was probably that actor. That actor probably brought his own dog.
I was trying to. I've been
so you also have a dog. You have the job.
That's right. It's like a personal ad. Please be able to act and have dog.
That's the only criteria.
God,
I love that.
Because it's not like that. It's not like the intro actor looks like Captain N either.
Not really at all. Yeah. The actor who played Kevin in the live action scene was Dorian Barag, and I was trying to find him online, and I can't find him anywhere. Because I wanted to get, I would love, who has he ever interviewed about this? Like, that would be fucking cool to talk to him. Like, yo, what was it like for that little one segment that you were filmed in? Because that just repeated it. Like, do you remember the room that you were in? Like, he shot for probably half a day, and that was it. Yeah. And I want to know if he knows what it was like.
I would be shocked if that man wants to talk to anyone about this. Like,
I know, right?
Just be like, that was a 15-second shot, nerds. Like, there's no, like, leave me alone.
I want to know, though. All right. So Duke unfreezes Kevin. Kevin pretty much outsmarts the dragons. I'm paraphrasing it to hell and back, but basically he outsmarts them, and they collide into each other, and they land on top of Eggplant Wizard and King Hippo. And then even though in almost every other cartoon they would come back and fight again or something, for some reason they just don't in this. You don't see Eggplant Wizard or King Hippo at all for the rest of the episode.
They're hanging from a tree somewhere, I think is what they showed them. But you left out the best part, Josh.
What did I leave out?
Because when they left the shop, Simon did buy something. He bought water skis.
He's the one. I forgot. He's the one that does it.
Yes. And somehow he accidentally steps into his water skis during this fight. And his feet get locked in. So he is water skiing while attached to the dragons with his whip.
On the dragon's tail. Yes. I forgot about that.
And then here's the best part. And just like the mother brain spraying the mouth or the breath freshener, the animators are better writers than the writers in this. Excuse me. I'm sorry, Jeffrey Scott, the guy who wrote this. But Please come on the show.
Please.
The animators,
don't listen to anything we've said, and please come on the show.
The animators animated Simon kissing his whip afterwards. Like, thank goodness that worked. Like, it's like very quick at the end of that, like, ooh, that worked. Thank you, Whip, for saving my life.
That they literally have done that line so many times to resolve episodes in the show, and we're only 7 episodes in. Like, something will happen and they're like, oh, thank goodness that worked. I'm like, how? Half of his schemes to save the day are just based off luck, just off pure RNG. That's it. Like, oh, thank God that worked.
It's okay, guys. I found it. Yes. I was obsessively looking for it. I was like, when the hell did they split up? Like, I needed to know when this happened. Okay. And I found it. Okay. So, so stupid. All right. So it's when they first get to the town. It's right after the dumb fox joke. And
that's what it is.
So they warp into the town and they're in like a wishing well. And Kevin says, Princess, you and Mega Man go this way and look for Puff, and then we'll go and try to head off Dragon Lord. That's when it splits off. Because I was looking at the scene in the shop, and I'm like, they're already gone. When did this happen?
That's what I was thinking.
It was just
too.
Such
was
like, a quick. What? It was such a throwaway scene. They just kind of all right,
for sure. And like, ironically, of course, like, you know, those two go off looking for Puff, and it's the other three who find him.
Right. The three men.
I feel vindicated now.
Now we may continue. Now that we know when that happened.
So they do end up finding the dragon. They find Puff, and they go hide in a cave after escaping the dragons. They hide in a cave, and that's where Puff is coincidentally hiding in as well, because story, plot progression, and whatnot, and they, you know, they're kind of chasing after her, and she falls off a cliff and then flies back up, and then begins kind of the whole three men and a baby aspect of the episode. And I'm not gonna lie, I hated these scenes because the crying dragon just annoyed the shit out of me. I hated that sound so much, and if that's what they're going for, congratulations, but it was like nails on a chalkboard to me.
Maybe it was before Yoshi's Island, so maybe this is what Yoshi's Island got it from.
Oh, this is another Captain N influenced Yoshi's Island. Is that what you're getting at?
Yes, exactly what I'm getting at.
Oh my god. And in the meantime, Princess Lana and Mega Man find the castle where the Dragon Lord is actually staying. And I found this a little humorous, where Princess Lana's like, Mega Man, why don't you use your key? He just lifts the door up and throws it all, like, just completely, like, just tosses it to the side.
Off camera,
it just disappears. I'm like, he just left that door wide open. There's going to be a breeze in there. It's going to be cold from now on.
Someone's going to notice that.
So, yeah, I know. And they already knew they were there in the first place, I believe. And that's when, you know, Mega Man's like, this isn't this isn't a living room, this is the dragon's bedroom. And I'm thinking, how do you know that? how do you know this is a dragon's bedroom? Like,
where's at the same time, though, doesn't she say, hey, this is like the biggest fireplace ever and it's a bed? Yeah, and it's and I'm like, how do you, what?
Like, what fireplaces have you seen?
Yeah, fireplaces do not look like big beds. Like, there's no,
there's a bit of a temperature difference, too. Just a smidge. Don't.
I'm just picturing Lana,
such a, maybe not.
Lana's such a rich princess that she just burns beds in her fireplace.
I like that idea.
I'm cold. Bring me another bed.
I'm cold. Bring me another bed. That's so good.
It's so stupid, but I need that to be canon. Oh my god.
Princess Lana just burns beds.
We just find out she's just a horrible person.
The camera pans to the left, and there's just a stack of mattresses. and all the subjects of her kingdom die because of all the bad air pollution from burning all those mattresses. Like, it can't be good for the air quality around that, you know.
I was trying to figure out who voiced Puff, but they just list they don't, when they do credits, they just do like additional voices, and it's just like,
oh, bummer.
So it could be any of them then.
Yes.
I do want to somehow get Gary Chalk on, because he did the voice of King Hippo. And yeah, I love that. I still think one of my favorite things, we talked about this in the first episode, Dex, that the voice of Mother Brain is one of the four tops. Like, yes. It still blows my mind.
Well, and also the voice of Audrey too, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Also voiced Audrey too in Little Shop.
Yep.
Yeah. Shop, yeah. Wars,
yep.
Which is essentially the voice that they do for Mother Brain.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Why would you not? When you have that voice, why would you ever do anything
it's
else?
It's such a good voice.
It's like Yardley Smith only does Lisa Simpson for a reason, because that's just her speaking voice.
Yes.
It's like Steve Bloom does his speaking voice for pretty much everything as well. And I love Steve Bloom, but he does pretty much his speaking voice.
Yeah. And Nolan North.
If you played Last of Us, he plays you wouldn't even recognize him in Last of Us. Like, he plays the final villain of that game, like the last bad guy that you encounter in that game. And like, I had no idea it was him because his voice is so different. I think David is his name. I can't remember. But anyway,
random aside quickly. Just talking about people who sound like the characters that they do. I know Barry Gordon, who does the original voice for Donatello for the Ninja Turtles. And that is his speaking voice. And a couple of times I've talked to him on the phone, and it's the weirdest fucking thing, because you just sounds like you're talking to Donatello, and it freaks you out a little bit, just a little bit.
That's kind of amazing, especially because you can't see him, so all you hear is Donatello.
Yeah, it's just Donatello.
It's not
even
coming out. Your imagination is putting it to it. So Mega Man and Princess Lana get thrown into a dungeon. For some reason, Mega Man's blaster doesn't work on the brick walls. They give something like it's protected by a spell. I forget what he says. And while all that's happening, of course, it has the cutscene. It has like the montage of the three men trying to take care of this baby dragon.
Oh wait, also his power also randomly doesn't work on the dragons too, right?
Yeah,
he like shoots the dragon and it does nothing, and there's no anything. It's just like, okay, I guess that's true. I guess that's the way it is.
There's a thing in Captain N where there's no consistency in terms of like, what powers are able to do. Like, we've talked to Dex and I have talked about before, like Captain N's powers, like, why doesn't he just use them all the time? Why don't you just use the pause button for everything? And there, it's not like they explain, like,
because what would they do?
Plot's the reason.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's sort of like, I mean, I bet all the shows are like that, right? Like Transformers. I remember in season one of Transformers, there's a back-to-back episode where at the end of one, Optimus Prime is like drowning in the ocean, trapped under an oil derrick, right? An oil derrick has fallen over and he's like under this big girder and he's like drowning. And then the very next episode, they are swimming to Atlantis. And it's just like, what? Like, that's how it bookends. He's like drowning at the end of one episode and able to swim to Atlantis in the next episode with like no... It's fine.
You don't need to explain it. Just let it go.
It's so weird. Yeah.
So this scene though, where they're all taking care of the dragon, right? They're all doing, you know, they determine the baby needs to eat because it hasn't eaten in a while, then it needs to sleep. During the feeding scene, Simon tries to feed it a dragonfly, which, dumb joke, but whatever. And then it shows a cow, and the model, like the character design for this cow, that cow looks like it smoked like 10 bowls of weed because it's weird. Stoned all. It's such a weird design. And then it goes to, and I'll let you guys comment in a second, I just have to say one more thing about this scene. Simon tries to milk it, and this is one of the most awkward scenes because he just gets creamed in the face like 3 times, and there's the crazy eyes again. He brings back crazy eyes.
It's like it's the fountain pen joke, right? that like where it's like, oh, the fountain pen's not writing, and then you look at it and it squirts you in the face. They do that, but then they do it like 5 times. Yeah.
It's already an awkward visual, and they keep doing it.
And you know what the writer was thinking, like what the idea was when they were writing this scene. Like, well, let's find a way to put jizz on Simon's face and find a way to make it kid friendly. Oh, let's just have a cow go there. That's fine. that scene is the wildest.
And then the one who successfully milks the cow is the dog.
The one without thumbs. Yeah.
By barking at it, he scared the milk out of the cow.
It wet its hooves, yeah. Something like God. That.
Yes, and then to top it all off, this must be where they got like adventure game logic from. They use one of the suction cups from one of Kid Icarus's arrows for the top of the bottle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like
this whole.
I don't think that's how plungers work, but
also no, just like the, yeah, it's a plunger. Like, the like logical journey of like, oh, of course it's a baby, so of course it drinks cow's milk despite the fact that it's a dragon.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yes. It's apparent all milk is the same in Captain in Dragon's Den. That's all right. Milk is dragon's milk.
You can write my dissertation about the milk in the Dread Captain and universe.
You can also drink through a plunger. A and the plunger was the perfect size for the can that they had, or canister bottle that they had.
Yeah. Well, so and of like, course the dragon immediately knows how to drink out of a baby bottle.
Yeah.
My daughter is almost 8 months, and she's still figuring it out, but she can't hold a bottle on her own yet. How old is this dragon? I guess it's walking and
I mean, it can talk. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's fair. It's walking and talking on its own. I
probably one of those things where like babies are like 300 years old.
You ever see the what's the lifespan of a dragon in this world?
Yeah,
we
exactly.
should find out.
I need more information. Before we continue this conversation, there's some things
we
I need
to
know.
Figure this out. Let me call up what's his face. I'm
Jeffrey
totally
Scott.
Blanking on Jeffrey Scott. Let's call up Jeffrey Scott.
Who is definitely going to come on your show now that you've called him what's his face.
I know. I'm sorry, Jeffrey. Please come on the show. You're my hero.
I love you so much.
I love you. Please come on the show. I'm not creepy. I was also seeing, like, I wanted to look up, like, the producer of the show, because, you know, the producer has so many, like, main, like, they have such a strong voice in the creative process for cartoons, like the producers do. So I looked up Andy Hayward, and he's now currently the CEO of Genius Brands Entertainment, which I had never even heard of, but they still do, like, children's entertainment, I believe. And they had subsidiaries of Stanley's Comics, Stanley Comics LLC. That's wild. Okay. Anyway, that's not important. I wanted to look up, see if I was trying to see if I could get Andy Hayward on, but since he's a CEO, I'm like, I don't even think he'd check my email if I send him something. So they go to, you know, once they get the baby dragon, once they get Puff the Magic Dragon under control, they start walking anywhere. And Simon's reading the map wrong, and they actually end up close to the Dragon Lord's castle, which, by the way, looking at that castle, that thing is not structurally sound. And did you see the design of that? There is it has the the foyer, the first area, like the where you walk in, it's, you know, square, rectangle, whatever it is. And all of them are just rectangles that are attached to the top portion of it. And it just keeps going up like a steps, but there's no support underneath it.
Did you happen to catch the name? Because they went out of their way to name it.
Castle and Sherlock, right?
Sherlock, right?
Yeah.
Sherlock. I was trying to look up what
they name checked Breconary, the starting town, and they name checked Castle Sherlock.
Yeah, and I don't
are those
think
actual names from the game?
No, that's why I don't. At least I don't think so. Like, there's no. You would think like because I just tried to Google it live because we're a very sophisticated show here, and I didn't find any like it tried to autocorrect me to Sherlock. So
there is no. So Sherlock Castle is a place in the game. I'm looking at the Wikipedia really? For the game
or
itself.
The
Sherlock Castle is yeah. It's Charlock. And then Tantegel, Tantegel Castle is another place.
Okay, then why is it called Dragon's Den and not Alfgard? Why?
That's a good question. If you know the name of the castle, like
exactly, if you're gonna go out of your way. Why? Oh my god.
I wonder if it was like legal reasons, right? Because like technically Nintendo didn't own the IP for Dragon's Quest or Dragon Warrior back at the time. So was it something where like they can only include a certain number of references to the game since Nintendo didn't own that? But at the same time, then like they didn't own Castlevania and Simon's in every episode. So like
yeah, well that and like you know the game industry was not then what it is now.
That's true. They
right?
probably wouldn't even
so
given
like
a shit
so
then.
You are looking at this through the lens of like modern Nintendo and like what how they would react to this. They were not. I mean, there was just like fucking handshake deals and all sorts of weirdness back then, right? Like nobody.
I don't think we would have gotten the Bob Hoskins movie if
yeah, or the end. or Lou Albano playing Mario in the TV show, or like you know, there's just like and all the like cross dressing jokes.
Or Link with like, excuse me, princess.
Yeah, super rapey Link. Yeah.
Oh, that cartoon is wild. Okay, so they end up meeting up with Princess Lana and Mega Man, who in the scene prior had found these items of power, which once again was like what you mentioned before.
Ooh, the Stefan. Keepers of power the had keeper. No idea where they were.
And first thing I had to say about these items of power, it's a lightning bolt that looks like a made out of gold or something, and then a golden suit of armor. And I thought the design for the golden suit of armor was really weird because the legs were super skinny, and then the chest piece was like a pot belly.
It was literally Simon is the only one in the universe who could fit into that armor.
But like he's not that thick, so like the only thing I can think of is like his skinny legs went into the skinny leg parts of the armor, and I'm just picturing he's got like 6 inches on either side of his waist between him and the armor and the actual metal of the armor because it's rounded. Like there's nobody in the world that fits into armor like that.
Also for no reason, I don't know if you caught this, but at the top of the helmet there's a propeller. There's a propeller on that armor.
Yeah. I did not catch that.
Yeah, just a little beanie. Stefan brought it up earlier when they're in the prison, when Lana and Mega Man were imprisoned. They just happened to be right next door to the Keepers of Power,
yeah.
Their little prison
yeah.
cell. And they're
and
like,
did they call them from that cell?
Yeah.
Oh, when did they get captured? That's true.
When like, did they get captured? Who knows?
Oh my god! You just completely broke my brain. When did they get captured? True.
How did that happen?
We have to stop it's talking now. I have too many questions.
So, all right, we're getting close to the end of the episode. So they meet Princess Lana and Mega Man, get the items of power, whatever the fuck. They come out. They say, "Oh, let's go to the Dragon Lord or whatever." And
they
then
just
he's
dragging
like,
that armor around too. They weren't wearing
you
it.
You don't see
was,
it.
Was
you
Lana just like Lana was just like kept in it?
I'm surprised Kevin and like they weren't like, oh my god, who's that dead body with you? Because it's just like on the ground.
Weekend at Bernie's.
And the thing is, right before they escape, they have to climb up this giant fucking thing, which presumably means they were hauling that armor up this cliff wall.
Okay. Although, to be fair, like Mega Man can like rip giant doors off hinges, apparently.
You're right. He could probably leap that in a single battle.
I'll give him a pass. I'll give him a pass on that.
So Simon, they tell Simon to get in the armor after, so, you know, they all meet up. Dragon Lord says, oh, I'm here to stop you. The mom is still evil, so she tries attacking her daughter again. Still horrifying and really dark. Simon gets in the armor, and then Simon gets in the armor, and he's about to get stomped, but then the dragon suddenly can pick Simon up in that giant suit of, the baby dragon flies under Simon, gives him a piggyback ride and flies off, into the sky with him. And I'm thinking, can this kid, like, how strong is this dragon?
Also, like,
it's so tiny.
Before we need to move on, I know we're getting close, but I have to. So these are the items of power. What does the armor do?
It makes Simon look ridiculous.
I mean, he was able to not die when he got hit by when Kevin threw the lightning bolt.
Just armor. Like, it's not like any plate armor would have done that. Like,
and it arguably, if it's made out of gold, it's weaker. Gold is a soft metal that wouldn't have protected him from shit.
Like clearly, like, as we'll probably talk about next, the lightning bolt has purpose. It does something. It's powerful. It is an item of power. But they like went out of their way to be like, the armor and this thing are items of power. The armor does nothing. It's just a suit of armor that only makes Simon more clunky. He like trips over himself in it. There's no redeeming qualities to this armor
at all, in the slightest.
It needed the dragon to fly. It's got a fucking propeller on the top.
Oh my god, how funny would it have been if it actually flew with the little propeller? He just went like ding.
At least that. At least that it would have done something.
The armor power is just that propeller on top of
It's just, he just breaks it off and like throws it at him like a boomerang.
Like, unless you're telling me that like the whole purpose of the armor is to get stabbed by the lightning bolt.
You've unlocked my final form. I'm more stronger than ever now. Simon turns into like a transformer or some shit. That's what happens. It was just the key to unlock the transformer in him. So Simon then takes the lightning bolt out of his back and chucks it into the sky. And that magically lifts the curse that they didn't say was cast over the land. They said the dragons were cursed, but did they ever mention that the land itself was cursed? Because I didn't think so. They said
no, but they said that if all of the dragons were turned evil, that they would be plunged into 1,000 years of darkness.
Yeah, it would be basically the end of the universe. And they just didn't do anything to explain that. They were just like, if we lose all the dragons, somehow that's going to mean the end of everything. All right, so let's go.
Well, what I love is that they throw the lightning bolt into the sky. It clears up everything. Sunlight comes down, and for some reason, sunlight magically heals everything. And the Dragon Lord is like, it's almost like he's the Wicked Witch of the West getting water poured on him. And he just kind of hisses and he's like, ah, no, sunlight. But why a lightning bolt? Lightning bolt to me is synonymous with thunderstorm, which means overcast skies, cloudy, and depressing rain and lightning.
It rain first, but then the sky immediately cleared. Yeah.
I guess the sky is always darkest before the dawn, or whatever the fuck that expression is. And the episode ends. It just ends. Simon gets licked by Baby Puff. And he says, I'm allergic to dragon slobber. And that's how the episode ends. Yeah.
And then the dragons get closer to Dragon Lord, but don't actually like do anything to him. He's just like sitting on the ground. Also, the thing that drove me the most crazy about this whole thing is at the end, this fucking crazy amulet of power, he still has it.
You're right. I didn't even think
they're just like, oh,
nothing
I guess
solved.
He's defeated. I guess he can keep that thing. Like, what?
Nothing is solved by this. They don't solve anything. He still has the amulet. He can come back and do the same thing again.
Like, he doesn't even have to come back. He can just do it right then. Like, immediately. And now they've used the lightning bolt.
You're right. Where else? This show,
the keepers
really
of power don't know where anything else is. So.
Exactly.
Are they keeping some other power? One of the last things I'll say though about this was I thought it was funny was when all the bad dragons turned good again, the one evil dragon, it was like when you see there's a shot of like three of the evil dragons and then, you know, it gets a little bit lighter and then their models change. So that way they're nicer looking. And I thought it was weird because the evil, when the one dragon on the left, he was like green. He's got like, when he was in his evil form, his eyes are very wide and piercing. But then when he turns good, they suddenly become droopy. Like he got punched in the face and he suddenly has like his face is all swollen up all of a sudden. I'm like, why is the good version of him like uglier looking? Why would you do that? It's such a weird design choice. And it most likely it was just they drew both of them like, who cares? Like these look close enough to each other. At least like when the mother dragon turned from good to evil, like it went from white to gray. I'm like, okay, I can see symbolically what you're going for. But when this guy goes from evil back to good, he goes from like kind of a cool looking dragon just with a mean face to like just a derp. Like there's just I can't find any other way to describe it. He just looks derpy.
Also, do you guys fondly remember the scene at the end where the mother and the baby have this like heartwarming moment where the mother apologizes for almost killing her? No, you don't remember that because it didn't happen. It didn't happen. She just goes, hey, thanks for saving my kid. There's no mention of like, hey, honey, sorry I tried to kill you a bunch. Like, as a father, that bothered me a lot. Be like, no, you have to say something to your child. Something. Oh my god.
She's more excited about kissing Simon too, like the baby.
You're right. Yeah. That's so weird. All right, we got to wrap this up so we can actually record our next one. So, final thoughts on episode 7, everybody.
I
that says it all. Just sighs and sadness.
I really wish that they would have, like, the writers would have written a little more Dragon Warrior into it.
Yeah.
I would have been, because like a lot of the other shows do that too, where like, you know, like the Super Mario, the Super Show did it all the time, where they just like went to planets that had like nothing to do with anything, and that was fine. Like we didn't have to tie it in. Like I would have rather them have just like gone and helped a dragon planet than like had it been a Dragon Warrior thing.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
That's it would have been better. It's fine. Yeah. It's all fine.
Yes. I'm guessing that the writer sat in a room, played Dragon Warrior for 20 minutes and was like, this is going to take a long time.
Yeah. I don't have time for this.
I got 20 more episodes to write.
We got shit to do.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. Overall, this episode was a lot better than I remember it being, because I actually liked episode 6 a little bit more than this, but only... I mean, at the time you would have heard the reason why, but at the time of recording this, no one knows my reason why. So we're going to save it. I'm going to save it right now. This is
preemptively
a weird
saying, "How dare you?"
I know, right? So let's wrap this up. That is Captain N, Episode 7, Three Men and a Dragon. Dexter and Stefan, thank you so much for joining me. Let's do the social media stuff again, real quick. Stefan, let's start with you.
Sure, you can find me on Twitter mostly. If you actually want to like interface with me, Twitter is the best. Art of NP, Art of Nintendo Power. You can just Google that; it's easier. Also, Instagram, Art of Nintendo Power with underscores under it, or Art of Nintendo Power on YouTube. But yeah, if you actually want to like ask me questions about art or anything like that, Twitter's the place.
All right, Dexter.
Awesome. Yeah. Not nearly as interesting as Stefan, our guest here, but you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. It's just my name, Dexter Morrill, DexterMorrill. I'm on there talking about my own personal artwork. I'm on there talking about video game history, all kinds of funny stuff. If you want to make jokes about Captain N, I'll be there with you. But that's where you can find me.
If you know what the armor does.
If you know what the armor does, please.
Right into all of us.
Slide into my
DMs. Gotta know.
Slide in my DMs with that information.
I just followed you, Dexter.
Yay!
As usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a number of ways. Give it a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or whichever podcasting app you use. It helps more people find the show. If you want to support it monetarily, go to patreon.com/stillloadingpod. Even just $1 a month will help grow the show. As of the time of this episode should be releasing, I should have revamped all of my Patreon tiers because they're shit right now, but they will be good by the time this episode comes out. What are they? I don't know. I haven't fixed them yet. So you're just going to have to go and find out. But they're good. I promise you. If you, and finally, the most important shout out is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to go check them out, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And also consider donating to Stefan's nonprofit. Could you say that again one more time, please?
Sure. It's the Interactive Art Collection. And yeah, so that what that does is that I personally fund all of the actual art pieces, so because I just don't I feel weird about using donations to buy art, but so what you what your donations do fund is the upkeep of the pieces, or like framing, for instance. Framing is incredibly expensive at museum grade, so like for instance in 2020 I spent $30,000 on framing.
Holy shit.
And that's all out of pocket, so anything you want to donate that goes to things like that, or for instance, it may pay for like a rental van to actually drive my collection to a show. Because the thing is that there's a lot of shows that are smaller and sort of further away, and they deserve to see these art pieces, you know, just as much as anyone else. But you know, the cost of travel, I don't charge for my services at all. I do ask for a reimbursement to get me there. So if I can supplement that through donations, then you know more smaller shows are going to be able to see my stuff. So yeah,
all right.
Awesome.
So go check his stuff out. That should do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. Dexter and Stefan, thank you once again for joining me.
Yeah, absolutely. I laughed a lot. I laughed more than I thought I would.
All right, and that will do it. Thank you all for listening. I will see you all next time.